Communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
You must contact me.
Negotiation? We've lost all communication.
Hello, and welcome to CO Bibbles Babble Bubble, your one-stop shop for all things Star Wars prequels. This is the thrilling conclusion of the four-part saga on Disney during the prequels era, 1999 through 2005. And I was doing a little bit of thinking. You know, a lot of times, at least I can speak for myself here, podcasts play a big role in my commute when I drive, as it does for a lot of people. But given the fact that there is this whole quarantine, stay-in-place business, so on and so forth, a lot of folks aren't staying at, you know, they're staying at home, not going to work, because they don't have a commute. So I thought, well, normally there may be those of you who listen to me talk while you're in the car and I'm in a stationary place, so let's do the reverse, where we're going to record the episode from a moving car, and you get to stay at place. So, you know, get ready for various clicks of the signal, and hopefully no horns or some sirens go by. This is a natural noises here, so it's a double fun episode because we're talking part of our Disney series, and we got car noises. And, you know, I thought there's no better way to close the four-part Disney saga with where it began. We're joined once again by Miss K Harmonizer. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Am I part of double the fun?
Actually, so I guess it's triple the fun then, because we have a guest. We are in the car and we're talking Disney. Or there's an asterisk next to that, because as a matter of fact, we're not talking about Disney at all. Rather, we're talking about the competition to Disney. Because we've talked about Disney live-action films, we've talked about Disney animated films, we've even talked about the Disney films that were on the Disney Channel Network.
Dang, y'all did?
Yeah.
Wow.
All the full sweep. But I think when looking at this period, it's important to consider what are the animated films released by all the other studios that were after that fabled Disney pie. So compile the list together, and this is the competition. So there's a couple ways we could dive into this. We could either break it down by year, or I think sort of a more interesting way to look at it is to break it down by studio. So I'm sure there's a handful of studios that may have been forgotten, but the ones that I have here are DreamWorks, Warner Brothers, Blue Sky Studios, which was the animation wing for Fox at the time, Universal Animation, Nickelodeon, and Cartoon Network Studios. So we'll start with sort of the granddaddy of them all, and that's DreamWorks. When people think competition to Disney, DreamWorks is the first to pop through. So K Harmonizer, why don't you get us started with a good DreamWorks film from the period?
There's so many. Well, we recently watched Madagascar.
Madagascar, yes. Sort of has the distinct characteristic of a handful of films in here that kind of spun off a series of multiples, of sequels that followed through.
We did not finish it.
We did not finish Madagascar.
That came out in 2005.
Same year as Revenge of the Sith. So what are some things about Madagascar that stick with you, either that make it worse than a Disney film, comparable, why it did so well in such a crowded environment of other animated films out there?
Well, I don't know how much self-disclosure you give here, but I think it's helpful to say we were in fifth or sixth grade when this movie hit the theaters.
Yeah, I don't remember
so
if it
like
was
10 or 11
years
old. Yeah,
spring or summer release.
I don't know.
Or, yeah.
I have no idea, but I think there were lots of parts about this movie, the talking animals being very fun, and adventurous, especially the fact that they end up on an island, San Diego.
San Diego, man.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, no, I think you draw a good point by saying, you know, that at least for you and me and a lot of people that listen to the show, you know, we were children when Madagascar came out. And it's kind of funny when you think about it, this film introduced a lot of people to Chris Rock inadvertently, which is kind of funny when you think about it, because in the decade preceding up to it, in the 1990s, he was a very big comedian, releasing some incredibly raunchy comedy albums out there, you know, talking about experiences at, you know, gentlemen's clubs and drinking a lot of alcohol and doing a lot of, you know, adult things. And here he is in a kid's movie, very much, you know, targeted towards children. You know, I think there's a couple of, like, hidden spatterings of adult humor in there. But one thing that, you know, when you look at Madagascar and some of the other movies in this list, and you compare it to, say, the Pixar films that came out, it seems like they don't really grapple with adult themes the same way Disney and Pixar films try to. Madagascar is just fun. It's not necessarily the tearjerker that, say, you know, putting on Finding Nemo is at times.
Oh, okay.
You know, or Ratatouille.
Well, I mean, we didn't finish it, so we don't really remember. I don't remember how it ends.
Oh.
I feel like maybe there was a moment at the end.
There was a moment in the end that warranted tears. Yeah.
I don't know.
This is judging with the first 75% of the movie.
The movie is pretty bizarre, watching it as an adult. Especially, like, the part where Alex is, like, going wild or whatever, like when every animal looks like steak to him, like he's, I don't know, I think that was an interesting concept.
Well, it's also, just to kind of to be nitpicky, every single animal looks like the exact same cut of steak.
Okay.
It's the same, you know, the animators could have got
favorite kind of steak.
Favorite kind of steak, there we go. Yeah, he's
he only eats the quality meat of New York City.
Quality
chef
meat.
Chef experience. high class gourmet filet.
I would really love to get a zookeeper's take on the zoo experience in Madagascar. The Central Park Zoo. Because it's comical, for instance, how low the fences are at that zoo. In the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the animals are able just to hop out. So just assume, like, oh, you know, they can just get out and move whenever they want. And, there's also, like, one of each animal. How often is that the case? We're like, yeah, come to the zoo for our one zebra.
Oh, I mean, is it a very small zoo? I don't really know.
Oh, like, they make it look small. I've only been there once as a child, but I felt like they would have more than one zebra. That leads to social issues.
Oh, like isolation?
Yeah, if you're a herd animal. I get one lion, but I don't know. Here we are nitpicking the zookeeping abilities of Madagascar. We'll go ahead
Maybe you shouldn't have started with this movie, because I definitely, like, nothing is very great about this movie. I mean, like, there's a reason we didn't finish it, right? Like, it didn't really seem to hit home with either of us.
No, it's not.
I mean,
I
was annoyed.
It's not too captivating. There's a gentleman in a Hyundai Sonata jamming out to music wearing a suit. It's kind of funny to watch. So if you picked up any music in the background there.
Given the recent, like, movement around, you know, reforming lots of systems, but the lot of attention on police brutality and the Black Lives Matter movement and defunding police and everything happening right now, and hopefully for continuing to happen, let's keep the movement going. It was crazy in the, like, Grand Central Station scene, that where the animals, like, were finally, I guess, like, found out that they were, remember, we found out they were
missing.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
And like, they were...
they get surrounded by the cops.
Yeah, like, a shit ton of cops. with like their with their raid gear on. What do they call
riot
it?
Gear? Riot gear. Full SWAT setup.
Yeah, and then there's like one animal control guy, to like tranquilize the animals.
Just showing how the police escalated things beyond control.
So, yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know
what the reaction to a lion in a train station would actually be.
Like, it was a lot of, I don't know. I'm surprised by the number of police that turned up for that, I guess. And it was just weird seeing, like, a whole bunch of cops in one place, because, like, that's what we've been seeing on the news. Mm-hmm. And, like, in real life.
And, yeah, to see it from a children's film from 2005. I guess there's a degree of eeriness about that, for sure.
Yeah, like... I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is...
Just the imagery was...
jarring.
No guns were fired. And I think that's pretty inaccurate. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, and, well, I mean, you can even look and see how people handle sort of the most famous instance.
Oh, Harambe?
Harambe the gorilla, yeah. I mean, at that point, you know, the gorilla was actually endangering a human child.
That depends who you ask.
Yeah, oh, saving a human child, yeah, according to some.
I don't remember.
What the final verdict was there.
I don't...
But, yeah, the fact they got off only being tranquilized... definitely different. You know, the conversation about...
Well, then there's the old woman.
The older adult,
who's just, like... they gave her some sort of, like, what, Eastern European accent?
Yeah, and a walker, right?
Yeah.
And she beat up...
like, beats up every animal or something.
Bad
kids. Frustrated.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do we even have, like, an angry older adult in this movie? Like, for comic relief. That's what all older adults are for in the media, I guess. Like, how stereotypical, again. And the whole accents throughout the movie was, like, kind of weird. Like, it's just the same sort of, oh, let's portray King Julian as, like a dumb Indian man. Was that his accent?
Yeah.
Like Southeast Asian crazy guy.
Yeah,
full of himself.
Well, yeah, it's the voice of that Sacha Baron Cohen, who's doing the voice there, famously of Borat fame. He's famed twice in a sentence. So his kind of over-the-top accents is sort of his thing. But it's kind of a bad look, in a way, for sure.
Well, I don't know why, like, for comedy, there's so much reliance on using, like, people of other countries, like, the way they talk, like, their accents. Like, why is that so funny to us Americans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Problematic, to
LOL.
Be sure.
For the kids.
For the kids. No, yeah, this is what will put in a lot of the ingrained biases in children's heads as they become adults.
Yeah, and like, I don't know. Alex the lion and Marty?
Marty is the zebra.
Can you guess which one is white and which one is the black man? I don't know. Like the lion, like the king of the jungle, the king of the Central Park Zoo, played by the white man, Ben Stiller. And then Marty the zebra does everything he can to make sure his friend Alex is A-okay. Such a supporting role. And it doesn't seem very much a mutual relationship of, like, support.
Mm-hmm.
Seems very one-sided. At least up until we stopped watching, which was, what, after...
after Alex gets kicked out.
They're running in the field together?
Yeah, Alex gets kicked out of the Lemur Society. and gets sent to live with the Fusas, because this is right after the steak scene, and he bit Marty's butt. You're biting my butt.
Wait,
line for the kid.
Was this after the cabana scene?
Yes.
So the cabana scene the like night before.
Oh, that was the night before. Yeah, this is like the following day or evening.
Okay. LOL at there being a bar scene on a freaking deserted island. Or, not desert. A bar scene with animals pretending to drink drinks that are, like, supposed to be cocktails.
But made, they even draw attention to the fact that they're not
the
cocktails.
Alcohol shaker is even the imagery.
The imagery's all like, there, but it's salt water, and they spit it out.
No, yeah.
And it's all because
it's all... Right. But I think it's so random that they have a bar scene in a kid movie. I mean, you could just tell that it's so funny watching these as an adult, and you're like, this is so written by adults and like not always with kids in mind. That's how I feel, and I don't know why some choices were made. You know, or who made these choices? Man.
Who knew this would just turn into a real breakdown of Madagascar? But important. This is a lot of stuff I haven't thought about it, for sure. Or at least not openly. In the interest of moving the conversation a little bit, I want to draw a point to the sort of the portrayal of police in DreamWorks films, which we see in Shrek.
No, wait. I have something else about Madagascar.
Oh, yes, please.
So, like, when the New York Giants, the Central Park Zoo characters, like, join King Julian's party, King Julian, like, openly calls them freaks, and, like, I mean, I forget, he doesn't trust them at first. Or do they trust them? I don't know, but the whole notion of, like, anyone new to the land, or anyone new, like, to them, to the setting is, like, a freak. It just speaks so highly of how, like, in general, America views people who come to this country, or, like, people who come from different places. And they're just, because they're not from here, they're automatically called freaks.
Well, I think that's intentional messaging in the film. I mean, we didn't get to
But why? End. Why do we need to normalize that, if someone's an outsider coming into circles that they were not once a part of? Like, coming into circles they are new to are automatically looked at as freaks.
Well, I feel like it's a commentary. Like,
That's something that happens every day here in real life.
Yeah, and yeah, they're showing it here, and then, like, the moral of the story of that's wrong. Like, we reconcile our differences, and we embrace... I mean, we didn't finish the film, so this is just me trying to remember it. But I think the whole idea is, like, we're all different, but, you know, collectively, we form the great mosaic of life. I mean, maybe they don't explicitly draw to the freaks, non-freaks difference thing.
Just the use of freaks is very... gross.
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe let's elaborate on like what we actually mean here. Like, I'm just thinking of kids who are at school and like there's a new student joining their class, and like, oh, that's an automatic freak because that's what I learned in Madagascar. Like, how unfortunate for the new kid at school. I don't know. It's just the language. Not really. It's really not that well thought out, but...
Well, I think it's certainly it's a fresh take.
I'm definitely not an expert on animated films. Especially not ones that I've seen for like 10 years.
I do want to take this time to make the pivot to the Shrek thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Because there is a scene in Shrek.
Shrek 1?
Is it Shrek 1 or Shrek 2? Where Donkey is calling the police pigs and calls them out for profiling. I think it's in the first one. When he gets pulled away from Farquaad's people. Or maybe when they're in, I can't even remember the name of that silly little town. Duloc. Or is it in the second one when they're dealing with the fairy godmother's goons? I'm not sure. The second one, so yeah, both Shrek 1 and Shrek 2 both came out during this window that we're discussing. And I would wager to say that out of all the films that came out opposite Disney, the Shrek movies were probably the most successful. Or at least those two. Maybe not so much 3 and 4, but they're the ones that have had the most cultural significance. You know, I think that there's a...
Yeah, they're still, you know, referenced and talked about, I think, a lot.
Widely loved.
Cult classics, you could say.
Yeah,
no. The first Shrek movie, for sure.
There's a sort of a sub-community out there that is a play on bronies. You know, those dudes that like My Little Pony, bronies. They're called Brogers.
What? I don't know about this, but okay.
Yeah, there's a group called Brogers. And the whole idea is that they're super into Shrek. And it's kind of started off as a parody, but then kind of evolved into something more. And if they call people who don't like Shrek Farquaads, like, oh, you're such a Farquaad. You know, they turn it into a verb. Or, sorry, an adjective. A noun, I guess. Farquaadian.
Wait, who's a Farquaad?
People who don't like Shrek.
Oh, okay.
Are called Farquaads. And they paint themselves green. There's been people who've had Shrek-themed weddings where the bride and the groom dress up and paint themselves like Shrek and Fiona. You know, just interesting stuff. Another, you know, funny man, of course. Two funny men in here in the Shrek franchise where we have... Eddie Murphy as Donkey. His second foray into animated films, having previously been Mushu the Dragon in Mulan. So, unlike Chris Rock, Shrek probably wasn't the introduction of people to Eddie Murphy. Also the fact that Eddie Murphy was doing a lot of children's films around the same time. But then Mike Myers playing the titular Shrek himself. I feel like there was a lot of attempted impersonations that came out of the Shrek franchise. You know, people either trying to hit that Scottish accent that Mike Myers does, or later on, people trying to hit Antonio Banderas being Puss in Boots.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
who we learn to love and respect because Puss in Boots is so cool. I don't know. I sound very enthused about this.
I love Puss in Boots. I think he's a great character. And I think Shrek is very clever. The whole world building of let's take fairy tales, the very thing that made Disney famous, and kind of turn it on its head and sort of fit them in with this like modern spin to them. And let's kind of make, oh, the Disney princesses are kind of bratty when we get to them. And Shrek the Third.
Yeah, the world creating is a lot of fun.
Yeah, far away in Shrek 2, when you get to see all that stuff, is really clever. And of course, like you say, some really quotable moments. One of my favorite is the kind of the back and forth between the gingerbread man and Farquaad when he's getting tortured and getting his legs chopped off. Do you know the Muffin Man? The Muffin Man? The Muffin Man! I think that's a fun take on that little...
Or what is it? I think it's the same scene. They're like, unfortunately, like tearing him apart, and Gingy's all like, not the buttons,
the gumdrop buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gingy's great. I used to have the little.
Who voices him?
I honestly have no idea. Actually, there. I don't know who voices a lot of the fairy tale characters, but it's all really well done. I like how. For instance, how like the three little pigs are German.
Oh.
And like the blind mice are like cool jazz cats. Like,
oh my gosh.
Hey. Oh no, like British jazz. They're like, oh, you're Reggie, what happened? That's a horrible impersonation. I don't know what they call themselves, but it's a neat premise. And also I like the messaging, you know, in the first one a lot, with the whole idea of you know, people accepting you for who you are and your inner self and kind of finding friendships along the way. And, you know, how you can... It sort of fits kind of the classic trope of let's get two polar opposites in terms of it's, you know, both a romantic film with Shrek and Fiona, but it's a buddy film between Shrek and Donkey for the vast majority of it first, before it even is a romantic one. And I'm a big fan of the whole unlikely friendships dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, even Shrek and Fiona, it felt more like a buddy film than like the typical romance narrative. I think I really liked it as a kid because this is the first time seeing a princess, so-called princess, play more of like a tomboy or masculine like role, which was nice because it showed that girls can be like that, you know, and still find love or still embrace who they are, you know, strong and independent, who like to fart and burp and, you know, that was cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's when, I think it's when they fight Robin Hood and his band of merry men, where they think they're saving her from Shrek, and then she does, like, a Matrix-style fight scene. Where, like, it slows down, and she spins around in air and takes them all out.
Yeah, she's not, like, helpless. Like, many princesses are portrayed, and what I'm sure you would describe her as a very, what is the word? Femme fatale?
Oh!
Character?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. I think it's definitely...
She meets the sexy mark for you.
Sexy mark? Oh, my. Yeah,
cut that out.
No, we'll keep it in. We've called out my femme fatale bit in the past. You know, talking about unlikely friends, unless... Is there any other film in DreamWorks you'd like to mention? Because I'd like to hop over to a different studio.
Why? You're done talking about Shrek?
Yeah, I'm done talking about Shrek. Unless you have anything more about Shrek.
Well, the three blind mice, whoever decided that was a good story, probably weren't thinking about how it portrays blind people in real, you know, in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blind people aren't dumb.
Buffoons, yeah. The three blind mice are done as pretty... total buffoonery.
I think we should be thinking about how different disabilities are portrayed in kid films. Mm-hmm. But I just remember thinking about that because people in my social circle were talking about being the three blind mice for like Halloween one year, and later realizing, oh, that's probably not a good idea. And I think the people who made Shrek go, I mean, they didn't get to that point where they thought it was a bad idea, but it's definitely something to think about. But no, there's so many things about Shrek that are iconic. Who would you say carries that movie?
The first Shrek?
Yeah.
That's really tough. You know, because I was leaning Donkey, but you made a good case for Fiona.
Oh.
I think I'm going to have to say Donkey because he's in it the entire go-around. I mean, Shrek is definitely the third character, like, third best character in that movie.
Third best? Who's the second best?
I put Fiona as number two. Yeah.
Okay.
And even though he's the titular one.
It's unfortunate... her comments at first that are so shallow and like close-minded about Shrek's appearance, but I guess we learn that she later changes her mind about that.
Well, I think it's explored in the second movie about, you know, it's what she was taught to expect, you know, how she was the product of her upbringing that was beyond her control, which I think is a great commentary about what happens with a lot of, you know, little boys and little girls about this is what boys are supposed to look like, that is, you know, that typical handsome man, and this is the typical beautiful woman you're supposed to desire. Right. and I think she goes to that, you know, we see the little diary she made of her and Prince Charming, and that Shrek discovers, and that's what kind of gets him off on a rage where he wants to try to make himself handsome.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You know, so that's that. It's a continuation.
Handsome.
Yeah, handsome, which is, you know,
a white man.
You know, a tall white man.
Well, we should mention that we are both white.
Yes. So. No, yeah, this is coming from...
We are definitely not aware of all the ways that our white supremacist foundations pop up in different film scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's a lot.
It is. Absolutely. So I want to move over to Blue Sky Studios to talk about a movie that we did see recently in its entirety.
Shrek is also cool because it touches on gender norms, but it kind of challenges them somewhat. Like I was saying with the whole, like, what a woman is supposed to act like, I guess. But it's still, like, very much gross, you know. Like, a lot of it. Like, I remember the mirror scene. Like, when what's his name? Lord Farquaad was choosing what princess to go after.
Yeah, and it was done like the classic game show. Bachelorette number one.
Yeah. Just his whole character. You know, this, I think they wrote it well, from what I remember, though.
Yeah, no, I think Farquaad is really a representation of toxic masculinity in a lot of ways, because so much of what he strives to do is for him to fit the image of the perfect man as he believes it, you know, whereas you see other characters in the film finding comfort in who they are and how they look and act. You know, Farquaad has an incredible, you know, inferiority complex with his height and wishing, you know, portraying himself as taller on the wedding cake and wearing the legs to make him look taller and more imposing in that scene leading up to it, and how, you know, he's looking for a wife not because of love but because he feels like he needs to have that wife in order to get that status symbol of being, you know, being a king by marrying a princess. So, you know, even though I think him being a little short man is there primarily for comic relief, there is sort of kind of an awareness message, like, you do not want to be like this guy. You want to be like the other characters who, yeah, they may have their differences that make them look different, but they find comfort and pride in who they are, versus the villain who is striving to be something that he's not. And that's kind of that's not the takeaway you want to have. You want to have to have the embrace who you are to be your best self.
Which, like, Shrek does, right?
Shrek does. No, yeah, Shrek does. Fiona does. You know, I feel... I guess Donkey doesn't really quite have...
Donkey, another great supporting character.
Oh, fitting the Marty trope. Yeah, the trope of, yeah.
But much needed. I would say, yeah, Donkey carries the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Murphy... definitely comedic relief. But I remember always quoting the "I'm making waffles" line when he first goes into Shrek's house at the swamp. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Or when they're walking to Shrek's house and Donkey's like, he thinks they've arrived or something, and he's like, "Wow, that is a nice boulder," or something. And Shrek's like, "No, it's right here. This is my house." I don't remember exactly.
You know, it's funny for me, Shrek, speaking of Shrek lines, that was the first movie I ever heard the phrase, "It's quiet, too quiet." When he walks in and be like, "It's quiet, too quiet." That whole, like, format, "It's blank, too blank." First time I ever heard that in Shrek. Very commonly used.
Is that when they're in the castle?
Yeah, they go to the city for the first... The city for the first time.
Oh, Farquaad's
place. Yeah, Farquaad's place.
Duloc's.
Yeah, the little Duloc song. That's also...
For the adults.
That's for the adults, yeah.
That's clever. Oh, the dragon. The dragon is so desperate.
Yeah.
Poor dragon.
But, you know,
I don't know if she has a name.
I think it is Dragon. I mean,
she, like, instantly falls in love with Donkey.
Well, because he's charming. I think it once again goes with the whole story that, like, looks aren't everything. I mean, you would think a dragon would want the toughest, most big bad thing.
We don't know.
Well, I don't know, but Donkey wins over her by being charming. You know, he compliments her and says nice things. And, you know, the idea, it's his personality that wins her over, you know? She doesn't see Donkey.
She definitely gets validation for her looks. Which is something, I guess, all women strive for.
Well, it's a love language, in a way. I mean, maybe not for looks. That may be more... shallow in kind of a way. I don't know, but...
Yeah.
But something that, as a dragon, she probably doesn't hear. You know, she's told she's scary and evil-looking, and then to be told nice things, you know, that being nice can go a long way. That's a takeaway.
Oh,
I don't know.
Sure. Oh, what nice teeth you have. Is that one of them?
That is one, yeah. Tying into kind of the whole, whatchamacallit? Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, the grandma?
Yeah, the grandma. Which is funny because the wolf is in the... does show up in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
In Shrek's bed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny.
I like the wolf's voice in that, too. Hey, how's it going? You know? Works so well if we're wearing the little grandmother outfit, too, the whole time. It's a lovely little nod.
Yeah.
So, basically... the
ogres are like onions.
Like cake! Layers! No, like onions. So, basically, I think the big DreamWorks takeaway here is that... thumbs up to Shrek. Shrek gets things right. Madagascar thumbs down.
I don't think we need any thumbs in this.
No thumbs. That's just
we're just talking about it.
We're not Roger Ebert here, the New York Times.
I don't think any grading is necessary.
Fair enough.
I mean, sure. If that's what you want to do.
No. Just Shrek succeeds in places where Madagascar doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll say that. At least when it comes to...
It just feels more... It's just... I think the whole thing's more clever.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Storytelling.
I don't know what the shared writer staff was on there. You know, if there's people who worked on Shrek and Madagascar the same way. Same studio, like how Pixar has a lot of... turnover, for
Shrek
instance.
Was 2001, the first one, and Madagascar was 2005, just for reference. Wow, we were in, like, first grade when Shrek came out? Dang. That was, like, a long time ago. Well, it sounds like you're wanting to talk about Blue Sky Studios' Ice Age.
Yes, talking about Ice Age.
Yeah,
sorry to keep interrupting your Shrek line of thought. But yes, old Ice Age.
No, it's okay. Ice Age. I love Ice Age. That was fun. We watched the whole thing like a week ago. 2 weeks ago?
Something like that.
And I really enjoyed it.
Ice Age is a...
who carries that movie?
That's a hard one, because I feel like, I don't think it's as obvious, but the answer is probably Sid. John Leguizamo does a great job there, because he's so genuine, too. It's not just comedic relief, but you know, the poor guy.
It's so sad sometimes, the stories he tells.
Oh, getting left
behind.
His
family leaving him.
Yeah, I know.
And, like, over and over again, and he's still like, oh, I'm still me. Mm-hmm. You get what you get. It's great.
That movie definitely has some heartstring moments there that really,
Oh, yeah.
That and really pull.
I think that is super important to make, like, a well-rounded, great animated movie for the kids and the adults. You know, not just focusing on dumb comedy, but having that emotional aspect really draws me in. Mm-hmm. Like, feeling like you have a connection to the characters. Because you can, like, you've had those deep emotions that they're experiencing, or, like, you can feel for them.
No, yeah, the story with the cave paintings, when Manny sees the reenacted death of his wife and child, is one of the, I think, hardest scenes in any animated film to watch.
Really?
And for me, at least, I think it's very tragic, and I give a lot of credit to the animators, both for breaking out of the 3D animation to do that 2D animation with the moving cave paint art, and then also for the way that they could make the animated mammoth look so sad and so defeated.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the moment where, you know, Sid, leading up to it, is being kind of annoying about it. Like, you need to be happy like that mammoth there, and then it's, you know, Diego, the saber-toothed tiger, picks up on the cue pretty quick, showing that, oh, here we go, this tiger who is, you know, working with the bad guy. You know, this is when we really see he has this emotional intelligence and emotional awareness to pick up on the sadness of his companion.
Yeah, like, lots of character arcs are seen because of, like, the emotional, decisions made in the end by a lot of the characters,
mm-hmm.
like Diego and Manny in the beginning, even seeing Manny be like this very, like, grumpy character, like, very isolated to finding himself, very much attached to various other characters like Sid and the baby and Diego. And I don't know, I think I feel like I can really relate to, like, multiple characters in that film. And I think the whole film is really about attachment, you know, like, it really digs deep into attachment styles and, like, the parent-child attachment and how that can, yeah, it's such an emotional movie. And I think a lot of it is because of the different relationships we see form and build and grow. so nice.
Yeah, I wonder if the legacy of Ice Age would be different, or would have been different, had they not made multiple sequels for it. Because I feel like the sequels kind of get progressively more ridiculous.
Yeah, we're only talking about the first one.
I
don't remember any of the sequels.
Oh, yeah, and the first one's the only one that came out within this time period we're discussing here. But, you know, I just, from what I remember, they get progressively more ridiculous and kind of over-commercialized that, you know, it took me re-watching Ice Age just, like you said, a week ago, for me to remember just how the emotional strength that film carried. Because I thought of it kind of more like a Madagascar with, like, oh, it's zany animals. But it really isn't. That first one, I mean, there's some zany scenes. Like,
oh, it's so funny.
It's really great, yeah. A nice Star Wars connection in there, because I'd like to try to pinpoint those where they are. Alan Tudyk, who plays K2SO in Rogue One, he voices a couple of the dodos.
Oh.
Doom on you. It's a great, great movie.
I like the rhinos.
The rhinos are great.
When Sid, like, tracks his poop into their salad.
And eats the dandelion.
He's a dandelion.
The last dandelion of the season.
Yeah, it's definitely got a lot of funny stuff in there, too. Man, but, like, when the mom is, I guess, dying in the water, and she's just like, here, Mammoth, take my baby. Oh, my gosh. Trust him to take care of the baby. And
the same species, I mean, that just, she knows that her group has hunted and killed. You know, finding that, you know, here is a beast that we have, you know, defeated and robbed of its family for sustenance and survival. I'm trusting it to look after my child. I think is a, you know, I think it's a beautiful sign of motherhood too, that, you know, to pick the option to keep the kid alive, even if it seems non-standard.
What's the other option?
I guess not leave it alive. I mean, let it die. I don't know. Yeah, be like, a creature, try to force herself to stay alive and care for it, even though, I mean, she was aware.
I mean, assume she, passes away when she is gone.
Uh-huh.
Like, she just floated down the river because she was so injured, I guess. But yeah, that's beside the point. It's just, even, like, there's no dialogue, and you can see, like, emotion within the animation of the characters' faces. And so I think that speaks so highly of the creators of 2002 animation styles. Like,
yeah.
How impressive.
Well, because they didn't try to spend the budget and time to making the humans look as realistic as possible, you know? It's like, let's make them look very smooth face, very, you know, because you could have spent a lot of time and money on the people that I think would have just been a waste. And instead, they focus less more on, you know, visual cues and the way it's facial movements and, you know, just like also the animals are kind of overly smoothed out compared for what we see in, like, Pixar, feeling like we're going to animate every single hair. You know, every single shimmering shell on a
Pixar
fish.
Pixar of this time? This era?
It wasn't quite there what it is yet. Pixar in 2002.
I guess, like,
Finding Nemo was just a year later.
Okay, and yeah, that has a lot more detail.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, but it's focusing, you know, let us take what we can to capture the real key elements that can convey the emotion here. And they do a great job with what they have to work with.
Totally.
Because, yeah, definitely a lot of animators, I think, go for style over substance. And the folks at Blue Sky really showed the case. Just because there's a handful of other studios left on the list, unless you have any more
no,
Ice Age
thing. We're not done yet.
Oh, okay.
yeah, Scrat.
Remember Scrat, we haven't talked about Scrat yet.
Poor Scrat, we decided, or I laugh, from what I remember, is he becomes more and more, like, beaten up by the world as the movie, like, in the sequels.
Yeah,
like, this is the first time we meet Scrat, and
who is
life's
a reminder,
pretty rough
he's,
for him.
He's the saber-toothed squirrel
he's
with the acorn.
He's a squirrel, and he really kind of gets, I don't know, the short end of the stick.
Over and over again.
With his acorn searching. Yeah. And it just gets rougher and rougher for him in the future movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
From what I remember. And it's just like, oh, come on, get the guy free.
I mean, this one ended pretty rough with the volcano.
Volcano.
Doesn't he go to Hawaii and he sets off a volcano?
He got a coconut out of it.
Right. Oh, yeah, there we go. So that's something for old Mr. Scrat. Yeah, Scrat's interesting because it's one of those things that are completely unnecessary. You can take him out of the movie, you shave off maybe 5 minutes a time.
I mean, it's the slapstick comedy aspect.
Mm-hmm. For the kids, yeah, wholeheartedly. It's kind of fun that here's a little side plot going on, too. Ugh,
no, but for the kids, like, something or some creature, some person, some animal getting beaten up or, like, getting hurt. I don't think that needs to be funny. You want to feel, you want to help kids learn how to learn what empathy is. And I don't know. I mean, I guess that could help with that. Like, oh, wow, I pity this squirrel.
This poor guy.
Yeah. So it could go either way, mm-hmm. right?
It's up to the child. Do with this what you want.
The parents are like, don't laugh at him.
He's having a rough go.
I don't know. But he's put in the movie for, like, comedy. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. That's great. I'm not done with Ice Age yet, though.
No, keep it going.
Man, I said this to you earlier, and let me say it again. Man, because that's all we see in that I don't know if I'm allowed to curse or not. I forgot.
You can.
In that movie, there's only men, other than the mom... unfortunately does not make it, and the only other women from what I remember are very much portrayed as women because they are sloths and they are given breasts
and curves.
They're given curves
and makeup
and hairdos that are like, oh, we want to make it very obvious that these are female sloths.
Sexy. So
these are very much women presenting creatures, and I think it's just very much over the top and unnecessary. And why the heck do we need that? And they're both just like sitting in the mud, the like hot mud tub, what are they called? It's a hole in the ground.
I think it's just hot mud tub. It's pretty.
And they're like, oh, we just want a husband. We just want to start a family. So Sid would meet our standards. He's like the last sloth on Earth or whatever before the Ice Age hits.
Who's a good sloth? Because they even mention like, oh, you know, all the handsome ones don't.
Like, it's only women in the movie are. We have to find a man, which is such a overdone narrative that just is. Oh, it's so. It's so toxic for girls to hear that over and over again. Like, we're only as worthy as much as the man thinks we are. Mm-hmm. We're only as needed in life to serve the man and get that mate, have those children. Yuck. Talk about norms. But yeah, that's just how Ice Age was in 2002.
Reflective of the time, unfortunately.
Like, the main characters are all men. Yeah. But I don't think that stays. I think that changes by the second one, which is good. I forget who voices the Sabretooth Diego.
Diego, that's Dennis Leary.
I don't know.
Yeah, he plays in either Chicago Fire or some firefighter show. A TV actor, mostly.
Chicago Fire? Did you Google that?
No, because that? I know he's in a fire. I don't think it's Chicago Fire, but I'm pretty sure he plays a firefighter in something.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know who that is.
You'd probably recognize the face if you saw him. But yeah, that's who. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Ice Age doesn't really have the heavy hitting cast that those DreamWorks films did, and so maybe Fox, who was the owner of
Blue
Sky
Studios. Romano is big.
Yeah, Ray Romano, but I mean, like, Ray Romano is no Mike Myers or Ben Stiller in terms of, I mean, big TV.
He had a TV show.
He had a TV show. Yeah.
I don't know. Is he a comedian? I'm not. I don't know much about Ray.
Yeah.
Romano.
So they're, you know. Yeah, Ray. It's like they put all their money on Ray Romano. Like, but don't get me wrong, Dennis Leary and John Leguizamo do a great job in, you know, most recently. Or I don't know if it's most recent, but if you just want to see the breadth of John Leguizamo's work, watch the TV show Waco miniseries, mm-hmm. where he plays a, whatchamacallit, agent,
FBI?
ATF,
alcohol,
tobacco, and firearm agent, and just to see how he can go the range from being like a very dramatic, serious role of a undercover government agent compared to Sid the Sloth, who's the biggest goofball of them all, but we love him to death. So, talented actors on there, just maybe not the ground-shakingly big names that we see in some of these other movies.
Maybe that's just speaking of your experience, though, because I feel like those are big names.
Dennis Leary? You mean?
The other two main characters.
Oh, John Leguizamo and Ray Romano.
Ray Romano.
Yeah, Ray Romano, definitely the,
Well, and Sid.
The marquee there. It's interesting because the other Blue Sky movie that came out, I think, has a far greater star-studded cast, which is Robots. We get Robin Williams plays the best friend. I can't remember who plays the main robot, but I think it's someone big. Like, it's not Michael J. Fox, but it's someone like Michael J. Fox. But Mel Brooks plays Mr. Bigley, or Bigwig, or whatever his name is, and I think like Michael Keaton or someone's the bad guy. So I think that movie's 2004, 2005. Maybe they had more of a budget to try to get the kind of the marquee names. But Ice Age is still way better than Robots by a long shot.
Oh, really?
I think so. I don't know. I'd have to rewatch Robots. Yeah. I only saw it when it came out in theaters.
I remember Robots being like very scary. I don't know. It's just like the like malicious robot burning all the other robots or something.
Yeah,
it's like the trash sweepers picking up homeless robots. Like very much like themes of social injustice.
Yeah, maybe this definitely warrants a rewatch.
Yeah.
For sure. Anyhow, that's our Blue Sky venture.
Oh.
Unless you have yet more to say about Ice Age, which, I mean, there is plenty. I was terrified by the armadillos in Ice Age. I thought they were very creepy looking.
Why?
I don't know. It's too smooth. Their faces, big bulgy eyes. I'm not sure. But anyhow, I think outside of DreamWorks and Blue Sky, the other sort of the largest studio, we definitely start to get kind of smaller options here, would probably be Warner Brothers. They only released 3 films during this window. One of them, which did very poorly when it came out, but I think it's definitely evolved into a very well-beloved film, and that's The Iron Giant.
Yes.
You know, voiced by Mr. Vin Diesel himself, Mr. Fast and Furious.
That was 1999.
1999, same year as The Phantom Menace. That movie was directed by Brad Bird, who's the Incredibles guy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that was kind of his first foray into directing. Iron Giant, I had a hard time watching that, like getting through the beginning of that movie multiple times because the kid watches a movie about brains, and I thought that was scary. Like, in the movie, The kid watches a scary movie, and I couldn't get past the scary movie the kid watched in the movie.
Oh, I honestly don't remember much, but I remember it being a great movie.
It's a very, very
touching.
Sad. Very touching, yeah. And, no.
And I remember the robot falling apart at one point, which is sad.
Well, he wanted to be the hero, and that kind of fits with the whole tragedy part of it, how he is deemed by society as a villain. Mm. And he ends up saving the city because military leaders believe that, say, like, let's blow up the whole town to kill the robot, and the robot wants to be Superman, and he yells Superman as he takes the nuke and flies into space to his own doom.
Oh.
It's just really, it's heavy stuff. And Yeah, Iron Giant, good stuff. Followed up by...
Well, let's move to a different studio.
Yeah, because Osmosis Jones, not much to say about it, and then a Looney Tunes film that had Brendan Fraser. It was their follow-up to Space Jam, and it just... I very forgettable.
Okay, what do you want to talk about next?
I think we should talk about the two forays by television networks into the theatrical release.
Nickelodeon
and Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Nickelodeon in 2001 released
Jimmy Neutron.
Yeah.
Boy Genius. And this was before the TV show.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was.
The movie introduced the TV show. And I don't know if they had the TV show planned when they made it. They must have, right? Thinking the movie would be a success.
And
I love that movie. I thought it was so much fun. I had it on VHS. I sort of explored, at least for the first half, that classic question of what if there were no parents? And kids were in charge. But there's definitely some questions that come out of that, which is like when they go to that theme park, who on earth is running the theme park rides if there are no adults? Are they like teenagers, I guess, who are able to like hit the go button on the roller coaster? And
they can do it themselves.
Kids do. I guess, yeah, when you have Jimmy Neutron, anything is possible.
Yeah. Do you remember feeling like this was a great movie for kids who valued their intellectual abilities? Like, to feel more proud of their,
being smart.
I don't know,
their
academic success, their...
I think so.
Their ability to, you know, learn.
Mm-hmm. Be creative, be innovative. I'm sure if you look at people who are our age, there's bound to be at least a handful of folks out there who are engineers right now who felt inspired.
Because of Jimmy Neutron.
I mean, I don't think it's that far out there. It'd be interesting to, you know, reach out to some engineering friends of ours and see what they thought of Jimmy Neutron. Because he was an inventor, and that's very akin to what they do.
What's the dog's name is Goddard?
Goddard, yes.
Goddard? Like G-O-O-D-A-R-D?
D-D-A-R-D, yes. Reference D-D-A-R-D. To an astronomer. And then, of course, Jimmy Neutron's full name was James Isaac Neutron.
Oh, my gosh.
Instead of Isaac Newton, Isaac Neutron. That was kind of
Brain blast. I
just remember his dad being a total doofus and being very into ducks. And maybe that was the TV show that looked into that.
We like ducks.
More. But I guess that movie didn't do well enough to warrant future forays into the theatrical space for Nickelodeon, because from that point forward, all of their movies tying to TV shows were just released, you know, on the channel.
Oh, it was released in theaters.
It was released in theaters. Oh, yeah, that's what sort of sets this apart, in the sense that once we got the Fairly Odd Parents movies, for instance, those were all restricted to, you know, being on Nickelodeon.
Hmm.
I think this is a good sort of flip around, that just as the Jimmy Neutron movie launched a series, the Cartoon Network movie that was released in theaters kind of closed a series. And that film
I remember watching Jimmy Neutron and being... Oh, wait. Did Jimmy Neutron... Yeah, watching Jimmy Neutron... And then watching later on The Incredibles and being like, Syndrome in The Incredibles took Jimmy Neutron's hair.
Yeah.
That's all I was
saying.
And
they also are kind of the same character in a way, too. Where
what?
Like, they use intelligence to build and invent things.
Okay, yeah.
There's probably fan theories that they're the same person, even.
Oh.
They look alike. And they're
no,
very
similar. Not Jimmy.
Jimmy Neutron, his nickname is Buddy. Go home, buddy.
I work alone. I think it was Fly Home, Buddy. Yeah.
Which already is a powerful statement, because it implies Buddy's ability to, you know, knowledgeably fly. Here we are going back to Disney. Even when
it's
we're
Pixar.
trying to... Pixar, yes, but we talked about on the Disney episode. Or...
Anyways, yes, Cartoon Network Studios in 2002 came out with the Powerpuff Girls movie.
There's no commentary. We're just we're singing the theme. I am
sugar, spice, and everything nice.
The only real take
chemical X.
The only real.
Well, I didn't know we had a Fogo de Chão. I've never been there. We're
by the Austin Convention Center, just to put things in perspective. We were driving on a highway, now we're driving downtown to see all the hopefully closed
bars
and restaurants that, you know, are practicing.
Should be closed.
That should be closed, unfortunately, are not. But anyhow, this is where the driving commentary comes in for sure. Anyhow, yeah, but the Powerpuff Girls movie, I don't actually remember much about it, except I think it gives us the Mojo Jojo, like, origin story.
Oh, yeah.
That
probably.
He was also Professor X's creation. And there's a little bit of heartfeltness there. But similar to Jimmy Neutron, I think, you know, both of those films marked the failed attempts of Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon to say, can we take our TV show and put it on the big screen? But from that point forward, I feel like all the movies tied into TV shows were released on Cartoon Network. You know, versus Disney, who was successfully in theaters releasing. The Recess movie came out in theaters. And the Doug, the TV show Doug, that movie came out in theaters also. So there's...
Yeah.
Definitely an element of it. Well, here's a group of people walking by looking like they're hitting a night on the town. Like a bunch of fools. Yeah, there's gonna be probably maybe more commentary during this stage on the drive of what we're going around and seeing here. But anyhow, that's it on the Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon movies that I have.
I'm not sure who made the Powerpuff Girls movie or Powerpuff Girls the TV show, but let's think about the way we portray adult women. And think again. Their body as the focus and not even showing their faces. Let's think about that again.
And the one time we do see
very much cleavage and curvy, which is great, but like let's make them people and not just bodies.
Well, I was just going to say,
was that the mayor's assistant?
The mayor's assistant, and the one time.
Why can't she be the mayor?
Right, well, and then her assistant could be the little old man.
Exactly.
That'd be hilarious. That's way more funny, in my opinion.
Well, because it's not a thing.
It's not a thing. Yeah, no, we're laughing at non-normal thing. Yeah.
Okay, what were you gonna say?
Oh no, just in the TV show, the one time we really see an adult woman in full is that time Professor X kind of falls in love and then she turns out to being like a super bad guy. Like, oh, you know, here's a strong woman
I don't
character
remember that.
And she's a villain. Just continuing to dig a hole.
And wasn't there a character in Powerpuff Girls named him? Or was it she?
It was him, she or her, but it definitely pushed gender boundaries. It was kind of a gender fluid character in a way.
Yeah.
Or at least gender identity. I'd have to talk to someone more familiar with the situation to know what's the appropriate.
Well, either way, they were unfortunately the villain.
Yeah.
Which just really hurts. Hurts the transgender community because people think they are villainous, according to Powerpuff Girls.
According to Powerpuff Girls. Very unfortunate indeed.
Yes.
Just to draw attention to the one other studio on the list, which is Universal Animation, these guys, which were tied to the great animator Don Bluth, historically didn't produce any film in theaters during the prequels era. They had Balto that came out in 1995 and Curious George in 2006. But mostly during this time, just because I think it's worth noting, they were releasing the various Land Before Time sequels, of which there must have been like 8. And that was straight to VHS, while also making 3 American Tale sequels that were straight to VHS also. So they were active, but just not in the same large-scale scene. This has been a great discussion, and I've really enjoyed it. I've definitely rechanged some of my thoughts towards films like Madagascar, for sure, and reaffirm my love for Shrek and Ice Age. Since you have the list in front of you, if you want to read out just kind of the films we didn't talk about for all the fans of them out there who are sad why we didn't dive into them.
All right, this is DreamWorks in order from 2000 to 2005. We have Road to El Dorado, Chicken Run, Shrek. Spirit!
Oh, that's a
Spirit
great movie.
Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron.
That is a fantastic movie.
Sinbad. Oh, Sinbad has a special place in my heart. Love you, brother. Okay, Shrek 2. Shark Tale. Nice. Madagascar. Wallace and Gromit. Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Yeah, the...
that was DreamWorks.
Yeah, DreamWorks had a partnership with the British studio that did the claymation for Chicken Run and then Wallace and Gromit.
Cheese, Gromit. Cheese. That was DreamWorks. Warner Bros. Was The Iron Giant, 1999. Osmosis Jones in 01. And then Looney Tunes Back in Action in 03. Blue Sky Studios / Fox. Ice Age 2002. Robots 2005. Universal Animations. Nothing theatrical. Land Before Time and American Tale. Straight to VHS films. And then, honorable mention because it was in production, is Curious George, which came to us in 2006.
So I felt like it should be noted they were working on something that would come out in theaters, but just at the in the post-prequels period.
Nickelodeon, Jimmy Neutron, 2001. Cartoon Network Studios, The Powerpuff Girls Movie, 2002. And that is just 5 of the studios who, you know, were putting out movies. Definitely, I'm sure there are others we didn't get.
Yeah, the ones that people would probably say were the biggest traditional Disney competitors outside of, you know, released by Disney would be Pixar, which was a division of Disney, and Studio Ghibli, which Disney was responsible for stateside distribution. And we talked about that in the animated section, so like Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away. So, you know, I would say DreamWorks is the obvious best non-Disney thing out there in terms of how many films they released. But special shout out that even though they just had 2, Blue Sky seemed to do well with their 2, mm-hmm. 2 right there. And
definitely
kind of held on to its own.
Absolutely. And we are going to remind you, everyone listening, that we are not experts. We will not claim to be experts in the animation critique business. And
the ACB, as it were.
Yeah. This whole conversation was an exploration of our own perception of the movies, remembering them as adults from when we watched them years ago, or talking about what we noticed from what we recently saw. I personally didn't think much about this completely before recording. So,
but that gives it a nice casual
vibe. Thanks for listening to my ideas being unpacked right before our very ears.
Our very ears, yes. And thank you for listening to our car episode.
On the road.
There were a couple highway moments there, and so, you know, if you're picking up sound, you know, we appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, everyone is staying safe during this continuously scary time in terms of the disease, but, you know, that...
And working on being anti-racist while staying indoors.
It's a great time to reflect yourself and, if you're white, the privileged society that you have benefited from.
Yes.
Anyhow, per usual, thanks for swinging by. We'll be returning to your regularly scheduled Star Wars content in future episodes. But thank you so much, Kay Harmonizer, for joining the show.
Thanks for having me for this very special episode.
Very trio-ly special episode indeed. And per usual, we will catch you all around the corner.
And thank you, Babble Bubble people. I'm sorry, I didn't slip that in before.
The Babble Bubble family.
Family. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
They're the family.
The one and only.
The one and only.
Very well.
Very well.
Yeah. Very good.
Peace.
Around the corner, bye.